everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to bring you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can download our podcasts on iTunes or listen to our shows on restaurantguysradio.com.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm just ducky this morning.
Yeah?
Ducky? Chucky. I don't know what I was saying. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Excellent. You know, I did something kind of fun about a month ago that we never got a chance to talk about on the radio.
Oh, your once-a-month fun thing. Okay, great.
Yes, I get to do, that's awesome. Right. I have four kids. I get to do one fun thing a month.
I'm single. I get to do fun things every night.
Good for you.
Other scotch, other cigar. Let's go on a roller coaster ride. Go ahead.
And for those of you not from New Jersey, and a lot of our listeners are not from New Jersey, there's kind of an iconic event that happens every summer here in New Jersey. There's a guy who writes for the Star-Ledger. His name is Peter Genovese.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
And he, for 15 years now, has been running every Saturday he goes out.
In the summertime.
On something called the Munchmobile.
The Munchmobile!
And basically it's a full-size van with a giant hot dog on top.
The big hot dog.
And he drives around New Jersey.
Welcome to Jersey, everybody.
And he tastes some... You know, and none of it's upscale. And he tastes some...
Highway food,
right.
Beach food.
But yeah, so, you know, something that you would eat with your hands or something, you know, simple foods. And he goes to some theme pizza, empanadas, you know, the theme that I went on was Route 1. So we went up and down the Route 1 corridor. And so this guy's been doing this for 15 years, and he goes to all these little Jerseyana-type places. Okay, and it's fascinating, this Munchmobile. So I went, I signed up to be a muncher. Okay, so I was a muncher on the Munchmobile about a month back. And, you know, I did it for a hoot. I did it because I wanted to see what it was like. I did it because, you know, a lot of people read it and talk about it, and I was curious.
Close your ears for a second. Mark Pascal has wanted to be in the Munchmobile for like 19 years. Mark Pascal, 27 points. He got restaurant he's owned for 20 years. Two great restaurants, Restaurateur of the Year. And Mark has always secretly wanted to get on the big hot dog van. Always. You've always talked about it. You've always said, oh, look what they're doing this week.
I wanted to review pizza. But they didn't do pizza this year, so we did the Route 1 Carter. Anyway, so this guy is an icon. It is a New Jersey iconic thing to drive around in the van with the big hot dog on top.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody knows you're coming. You pull in, and a giant hot dog pulls in and goes, hey, we're tasting your pizza. And you taste the pizza.
And who is on the Munchmobile? It's a panel of non-experts and experts and
it's just random. It is random New Jerseyites.
And you are one of the most random New Jerseyites I know. I got to be honest with you.
So it's just this fun thing, but I have to tell you about this thing that happened while I was on the Munchmobile.
Okay.
It's the Newark Star-Ledger that does this Munchmobile thing, and it comes the following Friday. It's in the newspaper. So we all pack into the Munchmobile. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. We're going on this 8 or 9 or 10-hour eating fest through five different places in
Something
New
you're really qualified to do.
I am totally qualified.
No, got it.
No problem here. The van, the Munchmobile, the big van with the giant hot dog on top,
yeah.
He puts it into gear. And it slips gears, and the car starts moving forward at about 2 miles per hour.
What?
He puts his foot on the brake. The brake doesn't stop.
What?
Okay, I guess I didn't tell you this.
No!
Okay, the brake doesn't stop.
Where are you? So
we're in the Star-Ledger parking lot, and the big gate.
And the Munchmobile is out of control.
And the Munchmobile
you are on the runaway
control.
Munchmobile. And with a big hot dog on the top.
And the
That's going to be in the movie.
And the power gate is not open. So we're just, and he can't stop. He's on the brake. He's hitting. He's trying to move the into gear, out of gear, and we're just rolling 2-3 miles
that
an hour.
Sounds like the funniest thing. I wish I'd seen that guy.
And we're rolling. I'm like, we need to stop. Gate's not up. Gate's not. We're in the gate. The gate. We're smashing in. We've stopped.
Thank God the gate was closed.
So you got this 1,000-pound power gate, and the Munchmobile just.
Smashed it.
Rolls into it and smashes it into oblivion.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
The damage to the gate and the Munchmobile.
So now we are...
What happened to the hot dog?
So now the hot dog is untouched.
Oh,
okay, the hot dog is unscathed.
Okay.
So he gets the car back in reverse and is able to back the car up now. Okay, he turns car off, able to back the van back up. But the power gate is destroyed.
So you can't get out. You're trapped.
We are trapped in the Star Ledger parking lot.
This is a great movie. I like this.
The Munchmobile that only can go backwards.
So okay. You went around the state backwards
only
for
control of. So two guys from the Star Ledger office go in and come out with some tools. They unhook this 1,000-pound fence, which is bent into oblivion.
Because it's in Newark, and in Newark, you need a 1,000-pound fence.
The six munchers now pick up the 1,000-pound fence and move it out of the way.
Uh-huh.
But now the Munchmobile can't go anywhere. Okay, Munchmobile smashed, and you know, there's a problem with the transmission.
Right.
Guess what we did?
You went in your car?
We munched in the Pascal van.
Did you?
That's right.
Thank God you have so many kids. The van
Pascal
was digging
Pascal van was the Munchmobile.
That's
of the day.
Awesome.
So we couldn't move the hot dog.
You knew where I was going. You knew where I was going.
I so wanted to move the hot dog and mount it on top of my car. Could not do it.
Oh.
So we traveled through New Jersey on... Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I've done a lot of fun things. I do this radio show. I own restaurants. I do a lot of cool stuff. I have never heard from so many people... Like, oh, you were a muncher. That's so cool.
Mark, that's because everyone who saw you wanted to write an email that said, didn't know you were a muncher. And they did, and they all did.
So I was on the Munchmobile. My car actually became...
You were deputized?
...authorized Munchmobile for the day.
Deputized as the Munchmobile?
And we drove around New Jersey, and it was great. We, you know, we went to an Indian restaurant. We went to a Turkish restaurant. We went to a Mexican restaurant. We went to a terrible pizzeria. We went to, you know, we went to a diner. It was really interesting. We went to a sushi place. It was really interesting. It was fun to try all the different foods. It was a marathon, though. I mean, literally... A marathon of eating to go to all these places because you're tasting everything in each place. And this guy has been doing this every Saturday during the summer for 15 years.
I just want to say that I'm glad that no one was hurt, but I could only imagine the headlines of the Munchmobile if it had been in an accident of like the car,
you know,
the hot dog. Why didn't that run in the paper?
You know what? I will put up, attached to this show...
You have a picture?
I have a picture of the smashed fence and the Munchmobile rolled into
Munchmobile.
It.
Munchmobile. It's kind of like a hash. It's not a hot dog anymore.
I will...
So
I will put up a picture.
I can't believe the Star Ledger didn't run a picture of the smashed Munchmobile.
The Star Ledger has not mentioned it.
They should have.
I think they're afraid that people are going to feel unsafe.
In the Munchmobile in the future. Well, and just one shout-out to Peter Genovese, who does this and has done it for 15 years. The guy is a real... He's a great writer.
Yep.
And
a foodie, and he's written a bunch of books on Jerseyana and
he
Jersey
really,
food places.
Really has a feel for Jersey.
And he knows, okay, what I'm going to tell you is, if you want to know anything about any of these types of places in New Jersey.
He's the guy.
He's the guy.
Where's the best cheesesteak in North Jersey?
You know,
where's the best?
Francis and I have been telling you about Rutt's Hut for 5 or 6 years. We've been going there for 20 years. We've been talking about the Star Tavern. I mean, Pete. To Pete, those are like his everyday places.
Right.
You know, he's got all the every place, you know, Belmont Tavern and every place that you would ever
Belmont
want,
Tavern.
Ever want to know about in New Jersey.
You know what the deal was?
Pete knows about.
You never used Belmont Tavern. Can we talk about the Belmont Tavern?
Sure, you got another minute or two.
Belmont Tavern on the border of Bloomfield and Nutley on Bloomfield Avenue. A lot of mobsters used to go there. You walk into the Belmont Tavern, you should go to the Belmont Tavern. Don't expect them to be nice to you, because they're not going to be.
And there's only one dish you can order.
And, well, yeah, well, no, the other stuff's okay, but the cavatiel and broccoli is the dish that everybody gets at you know, what's your dish?
The dish is the chicken Savoy.
Cavatiel and broccoli is...
Oh, my God.
I thought you were from Jersey. The show's over. I quit. One of you get the cavatiel and broccoli, and the other one... But you go into Belmont Tavern. Do not prepare for fine dining. Do not. But the food is good. You know what you get for dessert? Nothing. Go someplace else. That's what you get. Get up is what you get. You can have an espresso, but not a cappuccino.
We have an expression in New Jersey. Yeah. What you get for dessert is the bum's rush.
Exactly. Get out. I need the table. And if you want an espresso, you can have one. And if you want a cappuccino, especially if you're a man, what are you, a girl? I got a froth milk here. What are you, crazy? Have an espresso. It used to be a real mob place. Thursday nights was the night that if you didn't want to go there. But you walk in. Everyone's known each other. Their grandfathers been going there. Their fathers are going there. And it still looks like something out of an episode of Beretta. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, the Budweiser horses that were put up on that bar's decoration in 1952, still there. They don't go around anymore. They don't light up anymore. but they're dusted every day. That's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
So anyway, well, there are our Jersey tips. Check out the Star Ledger. It's one of the best papers in the country, and Peter Genovese is a great writer as well. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at RestaurantGuysRadio.com.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, and we have with us today Antoinette Bruno. Antoinette is a recurring guest on the show, an old friend, a respected food professional. She is the founder of Star Chefs, which you can find online, and Star Chefs sponsors the International Chefs Congress right here in New York. The 7th International Chefs Conference is coming up September 30th through October 2nd. If you're listening in the distant future to a podcast, this is 2012. Antoinette Bruno, welcome to the show.
Hey, Antoinette.
Thank you, guys. Nice to have me back. Thank you.
You know, how can we not have you back? International Chefs Congress has become, you know, it was a nice idea 7 years ago. It was a cute little thing. And now, I mean, all the luminaries in the food world are coming to this thing. It's a huge event. Tell us about where the International Chefs Congress has come.
Well, we're 3,000 people now. This year we have, I think it's 129 presenters. This is a record for us. I think last year we were in the 90s. We've added the coolest thing to ICC this year. We've added 20 food carts and 2 pop-up restaurants.
Okay. First of all, let's talk about food carts, because how more current could you be? I mean, food trucks and food carts are you know, a major focus of where food is going today. Where are these food carts? Are you going to be roaming around the Armory?
So we have, you know, for years we've had a food truck at ICC. So
yep.
This is our first
yep.
year for food carts. And as I said, we have 20 of them. So they're going to be permanently stationed. They're not going to actually move. So it'll just be like a street cart that you walk down the street in New York City and you find on the corner, you know, selling Sabrette hot dogs, except for we have Alex Dupac at Empillion, and we have Andy Ricker at Puck Puck, and we have Bill from Osteria Marini, and we have Craig Hobson with his brand new restaurant that hasn't even opened yet, called The Brewster, and Howard Dieterle. You know, it's an amazing lineup.
These are men you don't usually find manning the food carts in the streets of New York City.
Correct. I mean, we even have Jeff McGinnis coming from Miami with Yardbird. He's doing a food cart. And Ken Oranger is coming from Boston and doing a food cart from Toro. And Rodley Liu is doing a food cart from Aziza in San Francisco. And Paul Key is doing a food cart from Muchico. I mean, and Richard Blaze from HD1. I mean, it's a pretty amazing lineup.
Let's talk about what I view as the most difficult thing happening in the restaurant business today, which is the pop-up restaurant. We spend a year and a half conceptualizing a new restaurant, then 10 months to build it, then 2 months to train the staff, then, you know.
And I want it to last 10 years until I sell it to someone else.
I do not want a 3-day restaurant when I'm done with my 2 years of work.
Right.
What's up with that?
Well, I think pop-up restaurants are really cool, and I think they're a worthy concept, and they make a whole lot of sense. So you just talked about a huge investment of 2 years, lots of money and time into coming up with a new restaurant concept, and you don't even know if it's going to work. And how many restaurants open and are literally closed within 5 months of
So far,
the
none
day?
Of mine, thank you very much.
You've been quite lucky.
Right, yeah.
But, hey, there's been some rock stars out there that have closed restaurants in a short time. Even John George, you know, with his steakhouse that opened in Time Warner, it was closed within the first year or two. Concepts sometimes don't work, so why not try them out? And a pop-up restaurant is a great way to try out a restaurant. I don't know if you remember Rube 24 before with R.J. Cooper. He used to do this 24-course tasting menu at Vidalia, and he wanted to open this new restaurant, which he was going to do a 24-course tasting just like he was doing at Vidalia once a week. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to see, well, could this actually be sustainable as a restaurant? So he came to New York, and he set up a pop-up, and he tested it out for a couple weeks. And to see, you know, could he really do this day in and day out? Would people come? Would they like the food? Would they sit there for 24 courses? And it was a great way for him to test out his concept before investing millions of dollars into the actual restaurant.
I like going to pop-ups. I tell you that much. I love that idea. I want to point out to our guests, to our listeners, that Star Chefs or that the International Chefs Congress is truly a professional-only event, right? It's designed for the food professional. And we have a lot of food professionals who are listening in our to our audience on a regular basis. You know, one of the things I think that people who aren't professionals like about our show is it's, you know, we're two guys who operate restaurants every day, you know, and this is kind of an insight into that world. But I want to also talk about, for the consumers who are not, you know, going to take go to this professional conference, what are these presentations like? What do chefs want to learn about each other? And there are two things that go on in the International Chefs Congress. First is everybody's there. And so the opportunity to meet and talk to and trade business cards with and open up a correspondence or a dialogue with someone great is fantastic.
Networking is definitely a big part of it.
But beyond that, you know, you have a serious lineup of seminars presented. What are chefs teaching and what are chefs learning from other chefs? What's going on at the chefs conference that you're bringing to the industry that consumers would be curious to know about?
Well, it's rather interesting when you think about it. Once you become an executive chef, and you probably know this in your own restaurants, is that kind of the learning stops. So what are your opportunities to learn? New kids coming to work in your kitchen, and then, you know, are you going to learn from them? Are you going to, you know, sort of say, okay, I want to learn the new things that you learned in somebody else's kitchen? The Chefs Congress is this great opportunity for chefs to share with each other what they're doing. And chefs are proud people, and they are very creative people. And when they're doing something really cool, they do actually want to share it with other people. And the Congress is a great way to continue the learning process. So some of the exciting things that we have going on this year, and it's interesting because our theme is Origins and Frontiers. And we have noticed in the last 18 months this big return to where we began with food and chefs researching dishes from, you know, 500 years ago, 400 years ago, 300 years ago, 100 years ago, and actually recreating those dishes from the past and putting them on their menu.
Hmm.
And so that's kind of one of the big focal points this year at ICC is we're really going to be delving into the origins of cuisine and how that's affecting the future of cuisine.
I think one of the things that people would be really surprised by is something you just touched on, is that chefs really are very, you would think they'd be proprietary of all that information. You know, you come up with something on your own, you come up with something that's interesting, you come up with something that nobody's ever done before, which is hard to do in the culinary world.
Right.
And, you know, chefs are sharing that, okay? They're sharing it with the people who work for them. They're you know, in order to get it produced. But I'm shocked at how much they'll go outside their own restaurant and go on a TV show and share a recipe or put it in a recipe in a book, because you know, you would think that's part of their identity, but it's not at all. Part of their identity is sharing that, and I guess International Chefs Conference is a way to do that.
I think that it is very much a part of their identity, and I think by sharing it, they're actually almost copywriting what they're doing as theirs.
Right.
So why does John George make, you know, 20 cookbooks or Mara Batelli? They do it because they want to say, hey, this is actually what I'm serving at my restaurant. These are my recipes.
Right.
And they're documenting what they're doing.
I remember when John George von Gerichten at JoJo introduced America to the molten chocolate cake. And for 3 or 4 years, it would show up at some forward-looking restaurants. And you know, many people would put it on their menu as JoJo's molten chocolate cake. You need to attribute it for a while to somebody else.
Sure.
And there have been chefs
in the past.
That's
how it first appeared on our menu.
Yeah. Well,
was as JoJo's molten chocolate cake.
And there have been chefs in the past who've tried to patent and trademark thing. I mean, David Burke most famously patented the swordfish chop many years ago, but it just doesn't work out. I mean, you can't patent a dish. It doesn't work. Can't work.
You might not be able to patent it, but you can certainly brand it. And
exactly.
I think when you do things like publish a cookbook, and when you do appear at the International Chefs Congress, or you appear on Star Chefs on our online magazine, you're saying to the world, "This is mine.
Right.
This
right.
is what I'm doing in my restaurant." And look, let's face it, you know, copying is the highest form of flattery.
Well, and you know, but what I mean by you can't patent is you can say this is mine, but you're not going to get a nickel every time I make one. You know what I mean?
No,
that's
exactly.
That's not going to happen. When we talk about the International Chefs Congress, you made a point that I think is really, look, if you're a young chef or a young executive sous chef, and listen to me, okay? Mark and I have said for years, one of the things we have noticed, And we're in Jersey, and Jersey provides the opportunity for a lot of BYO places because liquor licenses are expensive. And a BYO place, a lot of people get their start as an as a chef in their in you know a little trattoria or whatever. It's a BYO place because the barrier to entry is low. And you know we've gone to places, and this is with 20 years of owning a restaurant, 26 years in the business, in an outer market, in a B market, right? In New York, this wouldn't fly, but in Jersey and in B and C markets across the country. You graduated from culinary school. You worked for a couple of great guys. Mm-hmm. You were really talented. And maybe you took that chef's job too early, you know, because they needed a chef and it was a great opportunity and they offered you the right amount of money or the ability to be a partner. And you're a chef at Trattoria Portobello, whatever, in wherever.
Goat
right?
cheese, sun-dried tomato.
And, you know, you were on the cutting edge when you ascended to be the executive chef of your little restaurant or your medium-sized restaurant. And that was 1997 or 2004 or 2008.
Right.
You're in an island in most places, and I think in places like New York and Boston and Chicago, chefs have a lot of, you know, you can go visit
Research.
Each other's restaurant and you can travel, you know, but you don't need to go to Italy. I encourage people to travel when they can, but, you know, chefs' time is very limited, you know, especially if you've got a family. You've got to grow. And Mark and I look at restaurants all the time. We're like, graduated CIA in 92. You know, because you look at the menu and you're like, it's a portobello mushroom with manchego cheese and balsamic vinegar. That was all the rage 17 years ago. This is a way. I think this is really important. And if you know one of these chefs, you should encourage them to come to the Chef's Congress because this is a way to – it's you're not just reading about it in a magazine what's going on elsewhere. You get the opportunity to taste the food. Attend a seminar with a chef who's moving things in different directions. Strike up correspondences with other chefs. Chefs of small restaurants in B markets, and a lot of guys know this, but this is you got to get out of your island. You got to
totally.
Move yourself forward. And you're the boss, right? So you've got to teach everybody else. And maybe you don't want to give that control. And maybe you don't have the talented pool of line cooks coming through your kitchen. Go out and get something new to bring back to your kitchen. And that's what this is about.
The Congress is the perfect place to go stage,
yeah.
to set up those stages, meet people. And I'm talking about top chefs staging with other top chefs.
Yep.
You know? I mean, I saw that happen at ICC. You know, it's Jose Andres will tell you, you know, he's ready to stage, and he says the day you stop wanting to stage or that you think you're too good to stage is the day you stop learning.
You know, if you're the executive chef of somewhere, you've got to put that ego aside and go out there. And look, even if you go and stage or work with or work under somebody who is of equal caliber to you but has a different set of skills, you can pick up new stuff.
Of course.
You know, and that's about what's moving forward. And that's what I think is this is a great opportunity for those in the business to really do. Got to talk about mixology. You have some of the most important cocktailians coming, and there's a good amount of seminars devoted to the art of the cocktail.
Totally. Well, we do that every year. We always have four tracks, so mixology is one of the four tracks. And we have some awesome one of my favorite sessions that I'm excited about going to is basically a cocktail seance summoning the ghost of Jerry Thomas. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And that's with Dave Wondrich and Bobby Hugel and Audrey Saunders. And I think that's going to be lots of fun.
I think David Wondrich is the ghost of Jerry
I'm going to send him this show. I'm going to send him a clip to this show. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, but you know what's really cool in the mixology program this year? And this, mark my words, this is going to be the next big trend. It is drinking vinegars. So
oh,
we have a
yeah.
whole session about drinking vinegars. I am so excited about this. I cannot tell you. I had my first drinking vinegar when I was in Korea. Actually, the first one I had was really at Puk Puk in Portland. It was like two years ago, maybe. And then I went to Korea, and then I had drinking vinegars in Korea, and I thought, wow, these things are so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's and so we have a whole session about making them, buying ones that are, or buying sort of bases to also make them if you don't want to make them from scratch, using them in cocktails, using them in sodas. I'm really excited about
you
that.
Know,
so
yeah.
Can I just tell you a funny, quick little story about the restaurant guys?
Mm-hmm.
So you said drinking vinegars, and Francis reached over to his right on the counter
and picked two of them up, and he is now looking at the bottles.
Actually, to be fair, these are not just drinking vinegars. These are shrubs made with drinking vinegars. But if you are out there in cocktail land, whether you're a pro or an amateur, if you're thinking cocktail, if you're thinking drinking vinegars, think again, my friends. Acidity is acidity, and as long as things are in balance, they're really fun and really tart. And if you ever see in a cocktail menu a shrub, that is sometimes can be made with a vinegar as well. It's a sweet-flavored kind of preserved sauce that's made with a vinegar, syrup that's made with a vinegar. Very cool in cocktails, very cool in punches. And you know, you want to find the new thing. You don't see them at bars just yet. Yet, you know, this ties into the other thing you were talking about, something from 100 years ago. You know, in Western cocktails, we had shrubs. Well, in punches, we had shrubs. People would drink shrubs. And those are drinking vinegar. So very, very cool stuff. What are the four tracks that you speak of?
Okay, so mixology is one. Track number two is pastry. And the pastry program is very exciting. We've got lots of fun things coming up. And, of course, the pastry competition is a really big deal. But one of the
A lot of people are attending that and kind of following that, aren't they?
Because, you know, it's a very different pastry competition. Traditional pastry competitions have teams. People have to take a year off of work. They have to go find sponsorship dollars. I mean, it's a real investment to actually compete in a pastry competition in the United States or elsewhere. And we wanted to take away all of that, you know, sort of unnecessary expense and commitment that a lot of restaurant pastry chefs could never do, and create a competition that was really for restaurant pastry chefs. And that's what the International Pastry Competition is all about.
We got the mixology track, the pastry track.
Okay, so then we have sommeliers, dapper young men and women who are in their suits and high heels, have to roll up their sleeves and run across the room and fight for a bottle of wine to pair with a great dish from a great chef.
So what you're saying is the guys have an advantage here.
No heels. Yeah. Well, the Somm Slam, what a great name. But the Somm Slam, terrific sommelier contest. And again, that's over 3 days, right? And if you're interested in wine, or a young sommelier or a young waiter, if you think you might be interested in wine, go take a look at these guys and see how they compete. It's sort of directly relevant to what we do on the floor.
And you can actually watch last year's Somm Slam on Star Chef. It's in three video podcasts.
That's really cool.
Kind of exciting.
That's really cool. Go to starchefs.com and check that out. Because if you've never seen a sommelier competition, you know, even sommeliers think, well, how does that work exactly? And this is a really well-run sommelier competition. I've actually judged on a couple that weren't well-run. I've judged on several that were, but I've gone to a few that were like, look, kind of a mess, right? They weren't really a good judge of what's going on. So take a look at how a good one is done. It makes all the difference in the world. So, okay, fourth track.
Savory. Sean Brock is coming from Charleston, and he's going to be exploring the pantry of the Carolina Rice Kitchen. We have Linton Hopkins, which he's doing something really cool. So he's paired up. I went to visit him this year, and I interviewed him, did a tasting with him. And he told me that he was all about learning about Spanish ham carving. And so he's doing this session. We're actually bringing one of these famous Spanish carvers from Spain. And he and Linton are going to be carving Spanish hams and American hams.
I will just tell you that you want to talk about an art form.
Oh, my God.
These guys are unbelievable. When you talk about, I mean, these hams are not easy to carve, and these guys make it look like they're cutting through a piece of butter, and they're going back and forth on these hams with no waste whatsoever. It's a beautiful thing to watch.
Well, they're called cortadores.
Cortadores.
And they go through a lifetime of training to become an established cortador.
This may sound ridiculous, even if you're in the business. If you know Spanish food and you've been to Spain and you've been to Madrid, and most Spanish restaurants, they have displayed right there on your way in. If it's a good restaurant, it's Jamón Serrano. If it's a great restaurant, it's Jamón Ibérico, right? And it's on the bone in a special holder, and they have a special knife. And when you order your Jamón Serrano, it comes to you, and it looks like it was done on a prosciutto slicer, you know, but it was done by hand with a knife. And to watch these guys, they take the fat cap off, and then they slice unbelievably thin, unbelievably perfect, unbelievably large pieces of paper-thin ham and lay it on the plate, and then they put the fat cap back on. And I mean, really, I know very talented chefs with great knife skills who don't there's a specific way you cut this ham. It's like a martial art. It's amazing. So that was very exciting.
Then I have some chefs that probably not very many people have heard of, young rising stars that are going to really strut their stuff, and this is their debut. And I have two I'd like to point out. I have Chris Nugent, coming from a restaurant in Chicago that's in kind of the suburbia of Chicago called Goosefoot. And you've probably never heard of him, but you will not forget him if you go to his Art of the Presentation to explore the power of edible visuals. He's a really cool chef, and he was a Chicago Rising Star in 2007, I think.
The edible visuals. Okay, with some suspicion, I will go to that seminar.
He's really cool. I'm telling you, this is a master plater. You're just going to love it.
You're not getting away with that. He was a master plater. That's funny. You went from my left eyebrow being raised to a complete smirk. Okay, go on.
Okay, and then Jason Bond is coming from Boston. He's from a restaurant, a tiny little restaurant. I think it has like 25 seats or something like that. It's called Bondier. It's in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has gone from being a charcuterie master to a vegetable master. How somebody makes that transition is kind of cool. But he's all about layering flavors, and he's a very soulful chef, and he is going to be teaching the art of layering flavor and texture in his workshop.
We're going to be there on and off throughout the conference, but we'll definitely be there on Tuesday. And if you're in the business and you want to broaden your horizons a bit, it is a super fun place to be. All chefs from across the world are going to be in town. It's on a restaurant schedule, Sunday, September 30th through Tuesday, October 2nd, so you don't have to miss Saturday service. And if you haven't signed up yet, Antoinette has made for our listeners a special offer available for passes to the conference. You can find out about that right after this show. You can go to restaurantguysradio.com, click on this show, and in the description we'll give you a code to use for a special discount if you want to attend this year's Chef Congress. Antoinette, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, Antoinette.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The website for Star Chefs overall is starchefs.com. They're a resource that they can send you emails every week that are a heck of a lot of fun, and their annual event is the International Chefs Congress. We hope that you find some time to attend it. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. I'm looking forward to the Congress.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I didn't have the heart to tell Antoinette while we were on with
you
her.
You married another woman?
No, not that.
She knows that. She's okay with it.
The first Sunday of this, we're actually not going to be there, Sunday the 30th.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We're doing a Hawaiian tiki pig roast with Brian Miller.
And Julie Reiner.
Julie Reiner are coming to the restaurant to do a Hawaiian.
Brian Miller, bartender extraordinaire. And Julie Reiner, owner of Flatiron Lounge, partner in Pegu Club, Clover Club out in Brooklyn. Sat with her in a panel at Tales this year, and we've been hanging out and talking cocktails forever.
You've heard both of those guys on the show, luminaries in the cocktail world, and very excited to have them at Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi on the
We normally don't plug our own events, but I think we should this time. If you want to come to the
tiki pig roast luau on Sunday of September
30th.
September 30th. Send an email to francis@restaurantguysradio.com, or you can just go to stageleft.com and make a reservation. We would love to see you. We're going to be making some great cocktails and rum cocktails and getting a pig out of the firebox. It's going to be
spend some time cool with Julie and Brian.
Hey, listen, we've run out of time, so we have to go now. I hope that you've enjoyed the hour as much as I have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We're the Restaurant Guys at restaurantguysradio.com.